Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Wednesday, the 27th of April, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL, and we're always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We're live weekday mornings from 9 to 10. We re-air the program from 7 to 8 in the evening. The lineup for today's show includes a conversation with Dr. Mark Sykes. Dr. Sykes is head of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute. Dr. Sykes will be previewing for us the space shuttle flight with so much attention on it this upcoming Friday afternoon. Then we talk with Mitch Tobin, environmental contributor to the Buckmaster Show. At the bottom of the hour, Herb Stratford will be along. Mr. Stratford is the former head of the Tucson Fox Theater Foundation. He has some ideas about how to make the Fox a viable operation. We'll close out the show with a newsmaker interview with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek. If you have a comment or question, you are always welcome. Call us on the Buckmaster Show live line 529-3508. Well, the eyes of the world will certainly be on the Florida Space Center shortly after noon this Friday as Commander Mark Kelly leads the second-to-last space shuttle mission, while his wife, Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, the victim of that horrible January 8th assassination attempt here in Tucson, will be looking on with a host of dignitaries, including President Obama. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show, Dr. Mark Sykes, CEO and director of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute and a member of the Planetary Science Subcommittee of the NASA Advisory Council. Dr. Sykes, always good to see you.
Oh, thanks, Bill. It's always great to be here.
You know, there's so much attention, of course, for obvious reasons. There's the Mark Kelly, Gabrielle Giffords story, but I guess there's more to this mission. There's some real science, and I guess some important science that is expected to be accomplished. Give us an overview of this shuttle mission.
Well, this is the last mission of Endeavour, and it's going to be taking up two packages to the space station. One is a express logistical center, which is a pallet that's going to be put on the outside, unpressurized for people to put instrumentation on, and you know, and then communication with the interior of the space station. And the other is a real interesting. It's a $2 billion instrument called the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer to measure high-energy cosmic rays and hope to detect dark matter and antimatter in that mix. So that's going to be a very interesting experiment.
What are your thoughts on the shuttle program? Has it been a successful program by and large?
Yes, it's been a terrific program. I remember watching the first shuttle go up in '80 on TV. And it's with a certain amount of sadness that we see it coming to an end all these years later. We've learned an awful lot about the dynamics and operations of this kind of a reusable spacecraft, our first reusable spacecraft. And, built a lot of a space station with it and accomplished many other scientific experiments, payloads, and just experience with long-duration human spaceflight.
Was the expected life expectancy of the shuttle program about 30 years, or has it gone beyond what it was designed to do?
Well, I think that it's always been a little open-ended because they're really... It's uncertain as to what follows this, and so the end of the program is really more of a fiscal issue than a planning issue, and so we'll just have to wait and see. There's lots of debate going on back in Washington, D.C. right now about what is next for the United States in human exploration.
And I want to spend some time on that question, because where do we go now from here with the space program, and how the current federal budget's going to impact that program and local space science and what you do here in Tucson at the Planetary Science Institute. Give us a little overview.
Well, on the solar system exploration front, I would say that we're actually in pretty good shape. There aren't any major threats to that going forward, and PSI continues to expand, bring in new people and more programs.
You've got quite a stable of scientists, dozens of them.
How many we're pushing 70 PhDs, right. About pushing 90 employees, and we continue to grow all the time. But
so your future, your immediate future at PSI certainly looks bright. As far as the federal budget, though, what?
Well, solar system planetary exploration is planned to decline slightly over the next several years in the president's budget, and I'm concerned about what appears to be the demise of the Mars program. We have benefited tremendously from that. We learned an awful lot about Mars, and but they seem to be wanting to put all their eggs in a Mars sample return bucket, which will actually. There's not enough money there to actually do the mission, and the plan is to do it over a span of a couple of decades. So you know that won't happen. But in the meantime, they would cease the regular sending spacecraft to Mars. And we've learned so much about that planet as not just this dead world, but as an active world with some potentially very exciting things going on, such as the where's that methane gas coming from? Is it really cows under the surface, or some active geological processes going on, or what? It's a far more dynamic place, and look at the Earth. We're not done exploring the Earth or understanding how this planet works yet, and here we have a sister planet where we can do a lot of comparative planetology with the processes that go on there and the processes that go on the Earth, and learn more about both places as a consequence.
You have written about, actually, there's some fundamental questions that need to be addressed, and I'd like to address those with you. We're speaking with Mark Sykes, CEO and director of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute. I think the first question is, do humans have a future beyond Earth? This is something that really needs to be addressed, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And unfortunately, our space program has been kind of built around space spectaculars.
The big show.
The big show, the one-shot deal, plant the flag, come back, smoke a cigarette, except we don't do that anymore.
No, but, of course not.
Then
a cigar, perhaps.
But if you think back to the 60s, and some of us can think back to the 60s.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And the exciting thing at the time, the public... Congress was pouring a lot of money into NASA to beat the Russians to the moon, but the public was excited about not beating the Russians, but about the dawn of the space age, and that we were expanding our horizons into the solar system off from the Earth, and that people would be living and working beyond the Earth. But whether that's a possibility is a question that we've never really answered, and yet it is one that we can, and we could do it today. We need to answer two questions. One is, can Earth life thrive at lunar gravity, Mars gravity? We could take the centrifuge that was canceled in 2006, put it on the space station, run rats at different radii for a few years with alcohol and party favors, like I said, and see how that works.
See if they get a family going.
Yeah, see if they develop properly. And other similar biological mm-hmm. experiments. But then, it's too expensive to lift everything we need off the surface of the Earth into space. It's like $10,000 a pound or something, and so we need to learn whether we could live off the land and make use of near Earth asteroid resources. These are objects that come very close to the Earth, very low energy, half of which we think may have things like water on them, in hydrated states. And whether we can use that for fuel to fuel rockets to take people from low Earth orbit to wherever else we want to go in the near Earth space or elsewhere in the solar system, even to the surface of the moon. We don't want to be hauling up all that fuel from the surface of the Earth. So these are questions that we can answer today, and that the United States, in fact, is in a particularly good position to answer it for the next 10 or 20 years. And then after that, I think other people will pass us by.
So much of the moon exploration, the moon missions were driven by competition with the Russians. And I'm just wondering, if America is not ready to really take the next step in space, is China perhaps ready to step in? And if China does step in, would that be then the incentive perhaps to get us going again?
I don't think so. I think that if the Chinese do move forward, that they will do so in a systematic way, and will do so not so much with the spectacular thing in mind, but rather that if they're going to go to the moon, they're going to go to the moon to stay, and they'll assess what that will require, in advance, and build up the infrastructure to do that. So We have, but they don't have the capability right now to do that. You know, that's 10, 20 years out before I think they'll be in a position to go after the infrastructural requirements for extending human space presence, if that's possible. This is something that we can do now. We've got the science bench, we've got the engineering bench, and the nice thing about it is that we don't have to spend a lot of money up front. You can throttle the budget for this as funds are available, but the point is that every step is a step forward and not a step towards another coffee table book that we look back in the past and say, oh, wasn't that neat?
And this, sir, we only have about 2 minutes to go here with Dr. Sykes. And, of course, every 10 years there is this survey that looks out over what our goals will be in space. And this has just been released. And what would you say in summary about that survey?
Well, the
I know in your note to me, you say that the survey actually dismantles the Mars program.
Well, yeah, effectively, there's some good things in the survey. This is the Planetary Decadal Survey. You know, it supports the basic research programs that we need to in order to define missions and to benefit from them by analyzing the data. There's no point in sending a spacecraft if you're not going to analyze the data afterwards. But at the very big end, it puts it at the top flagship priority, this Mars sample return thing. And I would say the first mission is just to go put material in a box on the surface of Mars. And then, you know, but if we don't have any missions after that to pick it up and bring it back, and it'd take two more big missions, then the value of that first one kind of is questionable. So it's really more of a bucket list.
About a minute to go, Dr. Sykes, and we'll bring you back the next time to talk about the commercial spacecraft, the X-COR, X-C-O-R. This could be up in suborbital less than 2 years, and you'd like to be a part of that.
Yes, PSI is we're putting together the ATSA Suborbital Observatory. ATSA is Navajo for Eagle. We plan to launch a telescope a facility on this experimental commercial spacecraft. I intend to fly it. Faith Vilas intends to fly it, and so we're getting in shape and training.
There you are. You look like you're in great shape, losing some weight and getting ready there for your space flight. Mark Sykes, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to seeing you down the road. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, coming up now in 19 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show, Mitch Tobin, our environmental reporter, is next.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom, centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
Minutes now past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. A report released Monday by the Interior Department says climate change is likely to diminish already scarce water supplies in the western United States, accelerating the problems for millions of water users here in the West. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show live line from his home in Colorado is Mitch Tobin. Mr. Tobin is former Arizona Daily Star and Tucson Citizen reporter. He's the author of the book Endangered. It shows why so many species are at risk of extinction, and he advocates for policies that will protect biodiversity in a warmer world. Mitch, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Are you getting any rain up there? We are having one of the driest years ever here in Tucson.
Yeah, it's been really interesting in Colorado. Here in Denver, we're in the middle of a drought, much like you are in Arizona and much of the Southwest. But further to the west, in western Colorado, they've had quite a bit of snow, and places like Utah are dealing with flooding right now. And it just points to how complex the water world is in the West, and how some areas can be in drought and some areas close by can be flooding.
There's a lot of concern, I think, about this report from the Interior Department, basically saying the annual flows in our three prominent river basins, the Colorado, the Rio Grande, and the San Joaquin, could decline by as much as 8% to 14% over the next four decades. That is not news that we need to hear, is it?
No, because even without climate change, the Colorado River and the Rio Grande and most of the rivers in the West were already over-allocated, and the demands on those rivers are already increasing because of things like population growth. And so now what the climate modeling is telling us is that a lot of rivers in the Southwest, such as the Colorado and the Rio Grande, are going to take a hit from climate change. Now, in some places, for example, the Pacific Northwest and Oregon and Washington, it might actually get wetter there. But the modeling is telling us that in the Southwest, that the lower latitudes, places like Arizona and New Mexico, are going to get drier as the years go on because of climate change. And it's something of a complicated story because temperature, turns out, is a really big driver. And it's not only about precipitation, because if you have warmer temperatures, you're going to increase the evaporation rate. And very critically, you're going to thin the snowpack. And rivers like the Colorado are almost entirely fed by melting snow. So if you thin the snowpack and precipitation falls as rain rather than snow, that can have a real serious implication on our water supply and reservoirs like Lake Powell and Lake Mead.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of confusion about climate change and how it does, in effect, affect the precipitation. You were pointing out that the heavy snowfalls, if they turn to just like heavy rainfalls, then you're going to get a lot of runoff in a hurry, and you're not going to get that buildup, correct, of the snow.
Right. The snowpack sort of acts like a reservoir, a frozen reservoir up in the mountains. And, you know, Tucson's water supply actually depends on places as far away as the Wind River Range in Wyoming and here on the Rockies in Colorado. And so when that snow melts in the spring, that's what feeds the rivers and the reservoirs and eventually the aqueducts that pipe water to places like Tucson and the Southern California cities. So the precipitation projections are more ambiguous than the temperature. The models are very clear that it's going to get warmer in this century. The study that we're talking about was basing its findings on 5 to 7 degrees Fahrenheit of warming. Precipitation is harder to determine. I mean, in a place like Tucson, you've got both the summer monsoons and then the winter rains, and those are two very different patterns. But in general, it's suggesting that places like Arizona are going to get less precipitation.
We really need to take, I guess, some action now, and I'm not really sure what the report affirms this urgency for planning. I'm not really sure what we really can do about this. Do you have some ideas on that?
Well, I think it points to the importance of conservation and efficiency, because it seems clear that we're going to be dealing with less water in our rivers, and so that makes it all the more important to use water more efficiently. And to me, that seems like a nonpartisan issue and something that pretty much everybody can rally around, being more efficient with our use of natural resources, whether that's water or energy or anything else. But it is going to have a big impact on things like irrigated agriculture, because in most parts of the West, you need irrigation. There's not enough rainfall, and so it's going to have dramatic effects on that. We also rely on dams for hydropower, and if there's less water in those rivers, it's going to impact the electrical supply as well. So I think, though, we can definitely be doing a much better job in terms of our use of water, and Tucson is a really great example of a city that has done a lot to improve its conservation and reduce its per capita water use. And if other Western cities, you know, adopted Tucson's model, I think we'd be in a lot better shape.
Have you noticed in the Denver area, is there that water consciousness that we have here in Tucson, or no?
There is. It's maybe not quite as strong here. I mean, you see a lot of lawns here in Denver, and it's not quite as dry, but it is only about 20 inches of rain here versus roughly 12 in Tucson. But there is a pretty good conservation ethic here, and the utility Denver Water definitely pushes that, much like Tucson water does. But I think the real key in terms of water use in a place like Denver or Tucson is that most of the water that homeowners use goes toward outdoor irrigation. And so replacing a lawn with xeriscaping or drought-tolerant plants can really dramatically reduce the water use in a house. And I think people will start to do that more and more as the cost of water increases, because we're expected to see the demand continue to rise and the supply probably continue to fall because of climate change.
Mitch Tobin, thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
Thanks, Bill. Take care.
Thank you. Coming up on 9:30 here in Tucson. We will be back.
Got something on your mind?
The time has come for all of us to speak out.
Call in and let us know.
Now start talking.
Talk about how you feel.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. President Obama hopes the birther issue is over. The president released his original birth certificate today that shows he was born in Hawaii, and he took a backhanded shot at Donald Trump, who's questioned where the president was born.
We're not going to be able to solve our problems if we get distracted by sideshows and carnival barkers.
But Trump isn't apologizing, and he took credit for forcing the president's hand.
Today, I'm very proud of myself.
Big, bad storms are rolling across the South again today. 4 people were killed when tornadoes hit northeast Alabama. 5 people died overnight in Mississippi and Arkansas. 9 Americans were shot and killed when a man opened fire at an Afghan Air Force compound today. 8 of them were U.S. soldiers. President Obama is shaking up his national security team. He's nominated CIA Director Leon Panetta to replace Robert Gates as defense secretary, and Panetta would be replaced by General David Petraeus. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
When you're shopping for a home, at Wells Fargo, we're with you. That's why we created the Wells Fargo Priority Buyer Pre-Approval. Come in, sit down, and talk with a Wells Fargo home mortgage consultant, and we'll let you know the mortgage loan range for which you could qualify. A Priority Buyer Pre-Approval is a great first step to help you start looking at homes within your price range. Wells Fargo. Together, we'll go far. A Priority Buyer Pre-Approval is not a commitment to lend. Please call for additional program details. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division of Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., member FDIC, equal housing lender.
If you've been looking for Pandora jewelry, look no further. You'll find it at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
That's Jared!
Life has its moments. Make them unforgettable with Pandora charms, rings, and bracelets from Jared. Jared has an outstanding Pandora collection, literally hundreds of items.
It can only be Jared!
Visit Jared April 22nd through May 5th and receive a Pandora jewelry holder with a Pandora purchase of $100. See store for details.
Mike Rowe went to a real Ford dealership service department to talk to a real Ford service advisor about a big event.
Fiona, if I didn't know better, I'd say you're having some sort of, what, sales event?
Yes, we are. Big tire and brake sales event.
That
yes.
means that you've got lots of different tires?
Yes, we do.
And how do I know as a consumer that Ford has the kind of tire that I need for my particular vehicle?
Well, we carry 11 major brands, so chances are what you're looking for, we have it.
What are the important aspects of the sale?
Right now, we have special rebates, offers, and discounts going on.
You're selling brakes as well?
Yes, we are.
Why should somebody bring their car here to get the brakes on?
When you bring your vehicle to a Ford dealership, you know that your vehicle's being worked on by technicians who work on Fords all day long.
And when you stop by now, you can buy four select tires and get a $100 rebate. And get a $40 rebate on Motorcraft Complete Brake Service. It's money right back in your pocket.
So you have a lot of tires, and it's a big event.
It's a huge event.
And it involves brakes, too.
Yes, it does.
Which is why it's called the Big Tire and Brake Sales Event.
You're good.
Yeah, thank you.
Front or rear axle. See participating dealership or visit FordOwner.com for vehicle exclusions and rebate details through 531-11.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
With 30 projects under construction, including work at La Cañada Drive and the First Avenue bus pullouts, the Regional Transportation Authority is delivering our promise to you already. RTA has completed 174 projects, including 5 major roadways, and launched transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars are creating jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer. Please be careful of workers in those areas and obey all traffic signs. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour, this is the Buckmaster Show, and I am Bill Buckmaster. Check out our website, buckmastershow.com. There's a very important announcement there about the future of our program, about something that's going to be happening June 1st. It's time to change the way Tucson operates our downtown performing arts facilities, so writes Herb Stratford in an op-ed piece in the April 22nd edition of the Arizona Daily Star. Mr. Stratford is the founding executive director of the Fox Tucson Theater. He managed the fundraising and restoration of the 1929 Movie Palace and oversaw operations for nearly 2.5 years, from 2006 to 2008. Herb teaches arts management at the University of Arizona and operates Historic Theater Consulting, which has been advising nearly a dozen theaters around the country, assisting with fundraising, programming, operations, and restoration. Herb, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Bill.
Tell me about what the secret is to turning the Fox around. How do you see the situation right now?
Well, I think what we have is a situation where there has been too much focus on the self-presenting, and by that I mean the Fox being at risk as a promoter. So they've been bringing in a lot of shows on their own, concerts and things like that, that they are on the hook if people don't show up. And also not having as many rentals as we used to have. For example, in 2007, we had about 180 days of use at the theater, and last year they had around 90-something. So there's a lot less use, and there's a lot more risky use. And, you know, granted, this economy is tough. We have the sound strike, the protest against the state of Arizona by a number of musicians. You've got a lot of competition. You know, this project was designed to primarily be a rental facility, so there would be an opportunity for the Fox to survive. If you're always at risk, that makes it very hard to try and keep things, keep, you know, the doors open.
Well, the as you say in your op-ed piece, the Fox's current management is moving forward with their plans to act primarily as a promoter of live music. See, I didn't understand that. I guess this is contrary then to the original model for the theater. How much live music did you plan in that model?
Well, and you know, that's the headline was a little bit confusing, because really, it's not so much that the Fox isn't a live music venue. The Fox is a great venue for live music. It's more that it can't be just a live music venue, and it shouldn't be the focus exclusively. When we set up the whole business plan for the Fox, it was supposed to be live entertainment, be it theater, dance, music, what have you, children's events, film events, and then a lot of corporate and private rentals. And so when you have that combination of those four aspects of programming, you have a lot better chance of making it work, because, you know, your corporate rentals are helping to underwrite some of your kids' stuff, and you know, your movie audiences are getting folks in the building, which then will come back for the other events. And that's not to say that we weren't at risk during the first 2 years. I mean, we promoted, probably 40 or 50 movies a year, and then I was doing 2 or 3 concerts a year, but it was certainly not 12 to 25 concerts a year. You know, and that gets a little scary, because, you know, the Rialto's just hanging on, and they do, you know, 15, 16 concerts a month. So it's not a business that you should be dipping your toe into unless, A, you've got a lot of money, or B, you don't have a lot of bills to pay.
You know, you point out that we need to privatize these facilities. When you say these, not only the Fox, the Leo Rich Theater and Music Hall, and look at a different model than I guess we're operating right now, as we're relying on the nonprofit entities and city management. What would privatizing these facilities do?
Well, I think what it would do is it would take the city and it would take nonprofit management out of the scenario, and it would put it into a world where the rest of us live, where, you know, you have to have repeat customers, you have to have a certain amount of rentals, or you go out of business. And I think that what we see at the TCC is a couple of venues that have been kind of chronically underperforming. And, you know, what I'm afraid of is, from the holistic standpoint of downtown, if we end up losing you know, the Symphony to Oro Valley, or say Broadway in Tucson ends up relocating, you know, that's a lot of bodies that are not going to go downtown. And so what can we do to make these buildings, you know, look better, perform better, and keep our tenants there in addition to attracting other tenants? So the combination of these three venues is really attractive, based on some other models I've seen around the country in my consulting work, where you've got three different size venues. You know, you have one staff that is marketing, promoting, managing, running these venues, and they're on a, you know, frankly, they're on a short leash. So if they don't perform, then, you know, you find another operator. But by taking it off of the city's, you know, dole, so to speak, so it doesn't require an annual subsidy or isn't potentially going to default on a loan, I think that's a good way for us to diversify things. And, you know, the city would still, you know, own the Leo Rich and the Music Hall, and Rio Nuevo would still own the Fox Theater, but there would be a for-profit management entity that would have to deliver.
Herb Stratford is with us on the Buckmaster Show. Mr. Stratford was the founding executive director of the Fox Tucson Theater. He now consults around the country. And we haven't talked about the tax credit partnership. This is an important piece, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, of course, this came together in the spring of 2005 when we were trying to finish the theater before we opened on New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2005. And part of the deal that we were able to put together was about $2.8 million in tax credits. And that, coupled with the loan from Rio Nuevo, enabled us to complete the construction. And, you know, at the time, the city and Rio Nuevo was really desperate to have some project done, which is why we kind of agreed to this process. And, of course, we also had been working for 5 years. We wanted to get the theater open. These tax credits, we were only the second theater in the country to get these tax credits. And since then, there's been about 8 or 9 other theaters around the country that have followed suit. And it's a combination of historic tax credits and what's called new markets tax credits, which are designed to help restore buildings in urban, you know, central urban areas. So what happens, and not to get too esoteric here, but what happens is when you get these tax credits, you have to bring a partner in, and they have to stay in the deal for a certain amount of time to make sure that this is not a tax dodge or some sort of a crazy tax shelter. So that tax credit deal is set up where there's an out at year 7. And there's some confusion in the documents because it was, again, a very early deal in this whole scenario of doing things this way. There's some confusion about, you know, is that exit strategy completely planned out correctly? But, you know, per the original intent of these tax credits, it was set up that at year 7, the tax credit partner goes away, and then the Fox Foundation is the you know, remaining entity. So what got a little confusing was a couple of weeks ago when the Fox Foundation was presenting to Rio Nuevo, they were saying, hey, you know what, you're stuck with us for 50 years. And my understanding of the deal and the way that, you know, I had conversations with the attorneys, that was not the deal. It was out at 7 years because they don't want to be in every single historic deal they do all over the country for 50 years. That's not something they're interested in.
So what's the future of the Fox? Got about a minute to go here, Herb.
Well, hopefully things can turn around. And I think from my experience that what I've seen around around the country at other theaters is that this model of combining a couple of venues together is the right model. I think we need to find a more aggressive marketing strategy, a more aggressive business plan that really uses the building much more often. And we need to get back to that, you know, 180, 200 events a year. That's the way the Fox is going to be successful.
But the theater is very attractive, isn't it? I know you're looking at other theaters around the country, the Tennessee Theater in Knoxville, and how does the Fox compare?
Oh, we're absolutely spectacular. I mean, we're one step below a national landmark, and I just hadn't finished that paperwork. We could probably get that designation. So it's a very unique property. The Southwestern Art Deco is unique. We're really lucky to have this building. We're lucky that it's still standing. And the money that was spent is money well spent. There's no problem there. We just need to see if we can activate it on more nights a year.
Okay, Herb Stratford, good talking with you, and we will talk with you down the road. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Coming up now, 45 minutes past the hour, City Councilman Steve Kasachek is next on the Buckmaster Show.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tancredi, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Tucson's Regional Transportation Authority uses your tax dollars to create jobs and make local travel faster and safer. Transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle and the completion of 5 major roadways are examples of how RTA is delivering on our promises to you. With 174 projects completed and 30 under construction, such as the First Avenue bus pullouts and La Cañada Drive, RTA wants to remind you to be careful of road workers and to obey all traffic signs. RTA, delivering our promises to you.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson community. Our thrift shop donations and sales provide more than half of needed funding, which goes to programs like Operation School Bell. Since its inception, Operation School Bell has provided clothing and school supplies for more than 38,000 children. But we need your help. Donate an item or a financial gift. Shop our thrift store or volunteer. For more information on how you can make a difference, visit AssistanceLeagueTucson.org.
Coming up on 49 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show, Republican Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek joins us on the Buckmaster Show. Councilman, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing, Bill?
Real good. Did you happen to hear any of our conversation with Herb Stratford talking about the Fox Theater and our he believes the need to privatize the Fox and the Leo Rich and the Music Hall?
I've actually spoken with Herb about this. I've spoken with members of the Rio Nuevo board, and I've spoken with people out of the city manager's office. I think it's absolutely the right direction to go. The problem is that the Rio Nuevo board is still trying to put their ducks in order in terms of what they've got financially. They're getting staff put together, and they're still kind of sorting through what they have in terms of assets and liabilities and all that. But yeah, no doubt about it. I think that it's a good idea. I think that the Leo Rich and the Music Hall would be great synergistic venues to put together with the Fox and find a private sector entity to manage all three of them. And I think what they'd find is that they'd be able to co-promote the venues in a successful way, whereas individually they're not being successful right now. So yeah, no, I agree with Herb, and I think it's a good idea.
You know, yesterday before the council, change orders for city construction projects came up before you and your colleagues. I guess these change orders have been a huge part of Rio Nuevo's repeated cost overruns. Is there a need now to reform the bidding process there?
Well, here's what's wrong, the problem with what was brought forward yesterday is that it was really confusing several different things. First of all, what appears in some of the city contracts as change orders in quotes really are nothing more than progress payments, and that's what they ought to be called. In other words, when a contractor signs a contract, say for instance for the streetcar, $180 million or whatever it's going to wind up being, they're going to have different progress payments that they are due as they advance from one phase to the next. So when the public reads that the city just issued a change order on a particular project, the streetcar in this case, it's going to look as though there was a scope change or something happened to the project that made it cost more, when the reality is that all that's happening is they've moved from one phase into the next, whether it be design or from one track section to the next. So that's a language thing, and that just needs to be corrected so that the public has a better understanding as to what really is taking place, not scope changes to projects. Another problem is that some of what's going on and some of the problems historically with Rio Nuevo weren't procurement problems. They were management problems. I'll give you two examples. One of them is the 4th Avenue underpass. That was originally bid at a $31 million project. The problem is that they asked for bids on this thing when the project was at 60% construction documents. And so a contractor came in, looked at documents that were just over halfway through the design, and made a bid. Well, that's not the contractor's fault that scope changes and scope creep happened in the last 40% of the documents. That's the city's fault, and that's a management fault. Another example is the Cushing Bridge. Those documents were bid at 30%. So in any construction project, if you want to get accurate bids up front, you need to give a contractor documents that are nearly complete. That's not a procurement issue, and that's not change orders that are the fault of some unscrupulous contractor. That's a management issue, and that absolutely is something that the city needs to get to do a better job at.
52 minutes past the hour. Steve Kasachek is on the Buckmaster Show live line, and we have a call for you. The caller is Joe. Go ahead, Joe. You're with the councilman.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity here. You know what? I want to believe in the last guy, but I think it sounded like text room, classroom speak, and it makes sense when you hear it, goes in the ear, but what didn't come out of the mouth was the conversation of political cronyism that's going on today. And everybody knows that when these guys are making money, all they do is pitch right back into these political campaigns on both sides, and that's the way the game is played.
You're talking about privatization of, like, the Fox Theater.
Yeah, you bet I am. And it's funny how you get these they grow like, God, I don't know, just like blood-sucking ticks or something. You can't get rid of them because they're so politically entrenched in our sold-out system. So, you know, that's the problem I've got, and it's lack of transparency, and it's a buzzword. Where's the meat, you know, to the sandwich? So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Go ahead, Councilman.
You're talking about the Fox?
Yeah, talking about the Fox privatization, worrying about cronyism.
If you're worried about political cronyism, then you ought to be supporting privatizing it and bidding it out on an open competitive bid process. You get the political cronyism when you get this incestuous same group of people who've been running one thing after another, one venue after another, all throughout downtown and in various areas of this city. If you privatize the thing, if you put the thing out for competitive bids out there in front of God and everybody to look at the bids, open them up, and let the best man win, then you know, you've addressed that directly. So I'm not sure that I agree that keeping it in the public sector is a way to avoid political cronyism. It seems to me it's just the reverse of that.
The city budget came up yesterday, I guess. Was this the first time you all have had a chance to listen to Mr. Letcher about the budget?
Oh, yeah, the council gave him direction on February 15th, and it was a framework that the majority of the council, I did not support, the majority of the council gave to him, and he was pretty much bound to present to us, to represent to us what we had given to him. He tweaked it just a very little bit, adjusted revenue projections a little bit. But the problem I have is that this council is identifying its priorities very clearly. We cut last year $15 million out of police and fire. I supported that because everybody had to play a part in balancing a $55 million budget deficit. Then what happened was that the council put together a framework. It included $3 million out of parks and recreation and zero out of transit. My sense is that when we are subsidizing the transit system to the tune of $40 million a year, suggesting that we take zero out of it is not realistic when we're trying to balance a $55 million deficit. Police and fire are core services. They took $15 million in hits. Parks and Recreation, $3 million in hits. Transportation needs to be a part of that also. Now, that is not to say that we need to gut the transit system. One of the things that I said to the city manager yesterday was, listen, we have a citizens' transit task force that is working very hard in trying to find system efficiencies so so that we can find overlapping or duplicative routes and build efficiencies into the system. We can't keep throwing millions of dollars at this thing. What has not happened is that the city manager and nobody from TDOT has sat down with the RTA with the specific intent of looking for efficiencies. We're relying on a citizens' task force who are volunteering their time to come up with an answer that the paid professional staff ought to be sitting in the same room at the same time coming up with. So that's what I want to see happen, and I want to see the council be a little bit more consistent in where it's identifying cuts. Core services, fine and dandy. Police and fire stepped up to the plate. Everyone needs to be a part of the solution.
I bet you're glad the legislative session is over, huh?
Well, the governor's still looking at several bills that can be very troubling. She has until May 2nd to sign them, and so I guess until that process has played itself out, we won't know for sure. This has been a pretty interesting session. The city of Tucson and Pima County, in particular, have clearly been a target of these folks, and. It's been kind of looking over one shoulder and then looking over the other to figure out where the next volley was coming from. I'm glad that they're out of session now. I'm hoping that the governor does the right thing on several of these bills, to quit messing with the way the city is trying to operate. The Court of Appeals just made a determination on how we can conduct our elections, and before the ink had dried on that answer, an amendment was made to try yet again to change the way our charter runs elections. And so, it's been interesting. It's been a challenge. And I'm glad they're out of session now, because now we can focus on what's in front of us in terms of city business.
That really was strange, wasn't it, about the all-male election, and then this other piece of legislation popped up?
Well, it was an amendment to a piece of legislation that came in at the 11th hour, and it said, in essence, that if you run nonpartisan elections, then you can do mail-in voting. Well, this came literally days after the Court of Appeals had said the City of Tucson charter allows us to run partisan elections. Now, I did not support the mail-in voting. I thought that we should keep the hybrid system or let the voters decide. The fact of the matter, though, is that the majority will of the council adopted this, and as you suggest, within days of that, the legislature came back and took another try at changing our charter for us, and the court had just told them, no sale. So, I'm not sure. I'm glad they're out. We can focus on what we have in front of us now.
Got about less than a minute, Councilman. What about the Rio Nuevo FBI probe? Do you know anything further?
Well, no, it's going forward. That's with the Attorney General and the FBI. They're keeping it under wraps, as they should. It shouldn't be public investigation, but you know what? Let's bring it on. Let the chips fall where they may. If there was criminal wrongdoing, then people need to pay the price. That's very, the taxpayers deserve nothing less than that. I'm glad that it's going forward now, because unless and until that gets done, we're not going to be able to move forward productively with the Rio board.
Councilman Steve Kasachek, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. That's going to just about do it for the Buckmaster Show, brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants located at 2919 East Broadway, and on the web at flowersrieger.com, Flowers & Rieger, the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. And that will wrap up the Buckmaster Show for this Wednesday. Thank you very much for joining us. And again, I direct you to our website, buckmastershow.com, for an important announcement. Have a great day.
Are you listening?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Local talk at its best.
Up next, you won't believe what's going to happen.
This is Tucson's Jolt.
KJLL, South Tucson.